from Psalm 4. That's Psalm 4. Hear me when I call, O God of my righteousness. Thou hast enlarged me when I was in distress. Have mercy upon me and hear my prayer. O ye sons of men, how long will you turn my glory into shame? How long will you love vanity and seek after leasing? Selah. But know that the Lord has set apart him that is godly for himself, for the Lord will hear when I call unto him. Stand in awe and sin not. Commune with your own heart upon your bed and be still, Selah. Offer the sacrifices of righteousness and put your trust in the Lord. There be many that say, who will show us any good? Lord, lift up the light of thy countenance upon us. Thou hast put gladness in my heart more than in the time that their corn and their wine increased. I will both lay me down in peace and sleep, for thou, Lord, only makest me dwell in safety.
Sorry to make you squeeze through there, Tommy. I just forgot to move that. I won't use it tonight. But I remember being trained, the way I was trained for wilderness survival was that if you would get lost, one of the last things you do is scream, help, until you go hoarse, because then one primary means of communication you have is gone. But what you do is you tap out SOS loudly on a tree or something with a stick would be one thing. But you say, well, when were you trained to do that? I was trained to do that when I was about 11 years old and before everybody was carrying around phones in their pocket. And about the nearest thing to that was one of those satellite phones. If any of you ever saw one of those satellite bag phones that just a few people had, maybe business people or something like that. And even with those, you had to be in just the right place, at least in Ritchie County. I don't know other places it might have been easier to use them. But where I grew up, those were basically just heavy bags with an interesting looking phone in it because it didn't do you much good. But what's the point of that? The point is you get a message out waiting, wanting, wishing someone to hear you. And now with cell phones, you might say, well, I don't really have to worry about getting lost because I just call on my phone. But what if you happen to be in a place in the wilderness that there's not a signal, and you can't get a call out? How do you feel about being found now? And so we associate our getting help with being heard and being able to communicate with someone. And that's true with God as well. In the beginning and in the middle of this psalm, David talks about God hearing him when he calls. He begins by asking God to hear him when he calls, and in the middle he says that he knows that the Lord will hear him when he calls. And that type of confidence is one thing that allowed David to be able to live the life of faith that he had, because he didn't have to wish or guess, think it was a gamble that when he called out for help from God, maybe there was some signal. He could know that God heard him when he called. And we could learn from David some confidence that we can have in our prayers to God. How do we have it? And I've broken this psalm up into two simple parts, and that is, we can have confidence, one, by being like David. David had some characteristics about his prayers that can make him confident, but two, by taking David's advice that he had for his adversaries. So first of all, whenever we say, I want to have a confidence in my communication and my relationship with God, so that whenever I am in dire straits and in need, I can know that I have full signal that he's going to help me. What do I do? And he begins the psalm by doing the right thing. Whenever you're in any kind of distress, he went to God. Very simply, first and foremost, how can we expect God to help us if we refuse to go to him when we need help? James 4, he chastises the brethren and tells them that they did not have because they did not ask. Now, that's one problem. There are other problems that he mentions, but he says that they didn't ask. And that's what David did as he went to God. He starts out by pleading to God for him to hear him. Hear me when I call, O God of my righteousness. And then not only does he go to God, but he had a history of this. And so this wasn't a first time. And you might see a recorded history or a show of someone, and they say something like, well, God, if you're there, I know I don't do this very often, but maybe, and perhaps as a Christian, if you don't go to God in prayer regularly, maybe it's been a long time. Maybe you feel unsure about it because there's not that history there. But David had a history. In the end half of this verse, he says, you have relieved me in my distress. Have mercy on me and hear my prayer. Not only am I going to go to God, but I can have a confidence because I chose to go to him first and I've chosen to go to him before, and he's regularly relieved me of my distress. Now, when we put this together with what's been going on in David's life, one thing that makes me think of is 1 Samuel 17. Whenever you go back to 1 Samuel, you find that Saul is with the Jews and they're against the Philistines. And instead of a typical military battle, as you would see it, what we have here is the challenge of a warrior battle, a champion battle. And the way that that's supposed to work, as they were suggesting, but it rarely ever worked that way, is that a champion from each side would fight, and the winner, that side, would win, and the war would be over. And it seemed like a good situation for everyone, but usually it just devolved into whatever side won, ran after the other side, and that's what's going to happen here. But in 1 Samuel 17, we found that David comes, and he's heard about this, and he's upset about the way that people are handling it, because after all, they were the people of God, and David didn't get what the problem was. In verse 26, it says, then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, what shall be done for this man who kills the Philistine and takes away his reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And another way to put that is, what does it matter who he is? Because he's defying the armies of God. He immediately thought of who he was for. He immediately thought of who Goliath was fighting against. And he knew, because God had delivered him before, that he would do it again. You start over in verse 31, and it says, now when these words which David spoke were heard, they were reported to Saul, and he sent for him. Saul sent for David. Then David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. Now David is going to hear this king's suggestion. Now think of David here. A king just said, you can't do this. A king, not just any person off of the street. After his brother was upset about him even asking about it, and other people not thinking he could do it, King Saul said, you can't do it. He's a man of war from his youth, and you're just a youth. Well, what did David do in the face of this? What were the facts? Well, the facts were Goliath was every bit of 9.5 feet tall, whenever you look at him being 3 cubits in a span, and his breastplate alone weighed that of a small person, a little over 100 pounds. So if you think about someone who's strong enough to just walk around with 100 pounds on their shoulders as equipment to wear in war, then you have an idea about how strong Goliath was. And the shaft of a spear was the size of a weaver's beam with a 25-pound weight on the end of it. And if you've ever held as much as 25 pounds, 9 to 25 pounds, but put a 9-pound weight on the end of a pole and see how well you hold it up. It doesn't work out too well. This guy was pretty strong. And so the king is sizing Goliath up and looks at David and says, you can't do it. But David appeals to the history that he had with God in regards to this. He says in verse 34, but David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing that he has defied the armies of the living God. He says, look, God's taken care of me here, and he's going to do it again. And whenever we practice a life of consistent prayer and reliance upon God, we can step back and we can say, he's done it before, and he'll do it again, because he continuously gave God the credit for that. You continue to look and go back to Psalm 4 for a second, and we'll look at him offering this credit. In verses 6 through 8, he says, there are many who say, who will show us any good? Lord, lift up the light of your countenance upon us. You have put gladness in my heart more than in the season that their grain and wine increased. I will both lie down in peace and sleep, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. He said, while everyone else might not realize where good comes from, who's going to do good for us? He said, I realize that God's the one who does good. And while things might seem good in my job or in my family, or if in David's case, in my rule as king, it's not because of my own power or how good I am, but that's come from God, and he's taken care of me more than I could have imagined. And so I'm going to lie down in peace and sleep. You remember Psalm 3, he talked about sleeping. Right in the middle of all of his troubles, he said that he would be able to sleep. Why? Because he trusted in God. He says, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. And he demonstrated that back here in 1 Samuel 17. Verse 37 says, moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. And Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with you. Now think about this. If David had thought about it a little bit differently, if David had thought, I am so good with a sword and I am such a good shepherd that a bear and a lion tried to take my sheep and I didn't let it happen. I killed him. I have good reflexes, I guess. And he never credited God with his health or his ability or his reflexes or protection. This could have been very different, couldn't it? What if David had said, I'm faster and stronger than any lion and any bear. I'm not worried about it. Who's he relying on? But what he did is he credited God with the good things that had happened. He credited God with the blessings that he had. And in crediting him, he knew that he could rely on him and trust on him. And whenever you continue reading, it says, then he took his staff. Here, verse 38. Crediting God too, he knew who he relied on, and it wasn't on anybody else, but it was on who he could be with God. Because it says in verse 38, so Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a bronze helmet on his head. He also clothed him with a coat of mail. Now, some people at this point are saying, picturing David as a child, as far as he's little. We hear youth, and we think of a little boy. But the idea is David was a young man. A couple of things show up for that. Just the chapter before it talked about Saul finding David handsome and strong, and he was going to be a shield bearer. And here you have Saul putting his armor on David. And what person who's confident enough to be a king of any country would take a boy and put a man's armor on him? Because you remember, Saul was head and shoulders above the rest of Israel. So David must have been a good-sized guy anyway to have this armor placed on him. And notice David said, I can't fight in this, it's too big. That's not what he said. It says in verse 39, David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said, I cannot walk in these, for I have not tested them. So David took them off. You have to learn and practice to fight in armor. This would have been unnatural for David. And sometimes, on a subtle note in this, we try to fight our fight of faith like somebody else. And we might admire them. They might be doing a pretty good job. But they might have a different route and a different fight than we have. And we aren't like them. We have different strengths and we have different weaknesses. And here what David does is he trusts in God to do the best he could as David. Not in Saul's armor, not relying on some other means. And wouldn't it have felt a lot better going against a giant, very well armed? But instead, David relied on his trust in God and on the skills that he had. And David, being a skilled shepherd, was also skilled with his staff and with this other weapon he's going to use, the slingshot, the sling. It says in verse 39, verse 40, then he took off his staff in his hand. He took his staff in his hand. He chose for himself five smooth stones from the brook and put them into the shepherd's bag in a pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. David is going, having trusted in God in the past and knowing who to credit with his success so far, and he's going being David and being faithful to God. Now, what's his advice in the rest of the psalm to others to give confidence as we put these things together? We looked at verse 1 and we looked at verses 6 through 8. Whenever we look at verse 2, we see that David's telling these adversaries that evil will lose. How long, O sons of men, will you turn my glory to shame? How long will you love worthlessness and seek falsehood? We don't know what was going on in David's life when he wrote this. You could point at several instances, and one of those is this fight with the Philistines. How long would they love worthlessness? They're on the wrong side. They're going to lose. You could look at it when Saul betrayed him. He was on the wrong side. He was going to lose. Or how about when Absalom betrayed him? How about when his commander wasn't who he should have been? And on and on and on. But the evil, the bad, always lose in the end, is one thing that David says. So if you want to have confidence in prayer, you've got to get on the right side. Might be something you could look at. Back in 1 Samuel 17, we find that there's this little insult match between Goliath and David, and David wins pretty soundly. In verse 41, it says, so the Philistine came and began drawing near to David, and the man who bore the shield went before him. Now, you have Goliath, and just to give an idea of someone who's a little over at least 9.5 feet tall, you just picture me. That's not me being 9.5 feet tall, but beside a basketball rim, and that's about the height disadvantage there. And I'm not saying that David was my height. He was probably a little taller. I wouldn't be surprised anyway. But the Philistine's coming out, and he's looking at this young man who doesn't have armor on. He's walking up in pretty normal-looking clothes and a shepherd's staff and a sling. And in verse 42, it says, and when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good-looking. He didn't even look like a hardened man of war. He just looked like a handsome-looking little guy, especially little compared to the Philistine, to Goliath. Verse 43, so the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. There was Goliath's part. And as far as we know, the last things that he said. Verse 45, then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcass of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all the assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, but the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. I think David won. David won the insult match, because David wasn't insulting. David didn't have to have hype. David had God on his side, and he had the truth. So David communicates to us that evil never wins in Psalm 4. And whenever we look at his life, what we see is we can have a confidence in prayer and in God being for us when we're serving him, and we're not relying on all of these other things. So what kind of image do we give the world? David gave Goliath and the Philistines the image of a man who had total and complete faith in his God. And he was going to prove here shortly that God didn't rely on swords and spears to win. That God won because of the very merit of who God is. And he could win by great or by small. Whenever we're dealing with problems in our life, do we act like we're on the winning side or on the losing side? And we see that David looked at his situation and his example for the people when he talked about it at the end. And he said, then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear. What do those who are assembled around us think about our lives and what we really rely on to save us? Because if we're not showing that we know that evil always loses and we want to be on the right side, we want to be on God's side, then we should rightfully doubt our prayers and if they're heard. Know that evil will lose. David goes on to say, in order for the adversaries, giving them advice, as the psalm looks like, they need to be godly. He tells them, how long are you going to seek falsehood? Verse 3, but know that the Lord has set apart for himself who is godly. The Lord will hear when I call to him. He knew that because it had happened before, but also in God's revelation, he had promised it. And since God had promised it and he could know that he was godly and separated out for God, he could know the Lord would hear when he called. And he adds to this, I'm putting this under being godly, but he says, be angry and do not sin. Meditate within your heart on your bed and be still. And we recognize that when we look at teachings in the book of Ephesians about how to put away the old man and live in the new man. And he says in verse 26, be angry and do not sin, nor let the sun go down on your wrath. Of all the things he chooses as far as saying God has separated out the godly for himself, and I know he'll hear me, he says, be angry and don't sin. And he makes this an important and very short statement about this balance. He doesn't say don't be angry. There are things to be angry about. And what was David angry about back in 1 Samuel 17? He was angry that the people of Israel were allowing these Philistines to intimidate them, like they weren't on God's side. And he could be angry about that, and he could not sin because it was a righteous anger. He was angry about the right things. If you're godly, it doesn't give you license to be angry about it, just anything. But if you're godly, you're going to strive to be upset about the right things. Does God get upset about things? Absolutely. God hates sin. It's one thing that we read about angering God. And it's something that we can be angry against and not sin, according to Ephesians chapter 4. But he advises them here to be angry and not sin. In 1 Samuel 24, we see another part in David's life where we see him contrasted with Saul. You remember Saul was chasing David and trying to find him and kill him. And in chapter 24 it says, now it happened when Saul had returned from following the Philistines that it was told him, saying, take note, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and went to seek David and his men on the rocks of the wild goats. So he came in the sheepfolds by the road where there was a cave, and Saul went in to attend to his needs. David and his men were staying in the recesses of the cave. And so, to put it delicately, Saul had to stop for a restroom break. So he went into a cave, and it happened to be a cave that David's men were hiding in. David could have taken this opportunity. He was urged to kill Saul at the time, but he didn't. Instead, imagine how talented David needed to be to do this. He snuck up and cut off part of Saul's robe so that he could prove to Saul that he had the opportunity to kill him while he was in the cave tending to his needs. So David comes out after that and approaches Saul. In verse 9 it says, and David said to Saul, why do you listen to the words of men who say, indeed David seeks your harm? Look, this day your eyes have seen that the Lord delivered you today into my hand in the cave, and someone urged me to kill you, but my eye spared you. And I said, I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. Moreover, my father, see the corner of your robe in my hand. For in that I cut off the corner of your robe and did not kill you, know and see that there is neither evil nor rebellion in my hand, and I have not sinned against you, yet you hunt my life to take it. Do you see the contrast between David and Saul, and why David could have peace that when he prayed to God, God heard him, because he was trying to live righteously? Why didn't he hurt Saul? Because he was the Lord's anointed. God had chosen him and put him in that place, and he didn't have a right to harm the Lord's anointed. And he proved to him it was the case that he had the ability to, But he didn't do it. So he goes on to show his humility in verse 14. After whom has the kingdom of Israel come out? Whom do you pursue? A dead dog? A flea? He says, that's what I'm worth. Why are you chasing me? Therefore, let the Lord be judge and judge between you and me, and see and plead my case and deliver me out of your hand. So it was when David had finished speaking these words to Saul that Saul said, is this your voice, my son David? And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. Now listen to what Saul acknowledges here. And you're going to find Saul's already had a spirit of trouble. Why has he been so anxious and restless? It says God sent a spirit of trouble upon him. But as we put this together in Scripture, what we often find is people bring it upon themselves. And one thing Saul's done is he's not been living godly. He doesn't have any promise that God's with him or that God hears him. And we find his life just devolves and falls apart, and he starts seeking other methods to try to find out what he needs and what he needs to do. And at this point, he acknowledges David's righteousness. He says in verse 17, you are more righteous than I, for you have rewarded me with good, whereas I have rewarded you with evil. And you have shown this day how you have dealt well with me, for when the Lord delivered me into your hand, you did not kill me. For if a man finds his enemy, will he let him get away safely? Therefore, may the Lord reward you with good for what you have done to me this day. And now I know indeed that you shall surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand. Therefore, swear now to me by the Lord that you will not cut off my descendants after me, and that you will not destroy my name from my father's house. So David swore to Saul, and Saul went home, but David and his men went to the stronghold. And here is just a little clip that shows a comparison and a contrast between someone who's living in confidence in a godly way and how they confront an enemy. He doesn't hurt him when it was in his hands to do it. He may have been angry about what was going on, but he didn't take vengeance into his own hands, because David practiced that the vengeance belonged to the Lord. David would advise adversaries to give themselves. Whenever you look back at Psalm 4, he says in verse 5, offer the sacrifices of righteousness and put your trust in the Lord. What are the sacrifices of righteousness? Well, you could say sacrifices as far as offering animals, and certainly those were part of being righteous in that day. We don't offer animals today, but in order to live according to God's law, you had to go through the prescribed method. But there was more to it. The sacrifice of righteousness was living a life devoted in righteousness to God, was living a life putting your trust in Him, which required you to do more than just go through the movements. It required your whole self. And that was one problem that Saul had. You go back to 1 Samuel chapter 15, and Saul here does something that's basically the last straw. There were warnings that he had that he was in trouble and his kingdom would be taken away if he'd continue it. And here he's told to go and slay Agag, and he doesn't among the Amalekites. And he even spares animals. And whenever you look in verse 21, Samuel's correcting him and says, but the people took the plunder, sheep and oxen, the best of the things that should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice to the Lord your God at Gilgal. Samuel's going to correct him here in verse 22. So Samuel said, has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? For behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, to heed than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king. And look at what Saul realizes here. So Saul said to Samuel, I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and your words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice. Saul went through the motions at times. Sometimes he completely didn't do that. But the problem wasn't just the sacrifices weren't good enough. Saul was not obedient to God. God wants all of us. He doesn't just want a part of our service. Whenever we look at how we serve God and how we can have confidence in Him, is we can look at our life every day from morning to evening, and we can say, would I say that I'm striving to serve God and giving myself in obedience to Him daily? Or do maybe I try when I'm in need, or on a Sunday or a Wednesday? And then how should we have confidence in our prayers if it seems like we're just coming to Him when we need Him and not any other time? How does that make us feel if we have a friend or family member that we never hear from unless they're calling and saying, something happened to my car and I was just wondering if you happen to have $100 to help me out. Now, not saying you'd be wrong in helping them, but how does it make you feel? What kind of relationship do they have with you? Do they have one at all? And that's just a small illustration of a much bigger application. What kind of relationship do we have with God whenever we find ourselves just in a tough spot and we're hoping He'll bail us out instead of always offering ourselves sacrifice of righteousness? And isn't that what Paul calls it in Romans 12 when he says it's a just offering to give God our whole selves as a living sacrifice? So David advises us, if we want to know that God hears us, we learn from his example of trusting in God and relying on Him fully, and we learn from what he advises his enemies to do, to cease their ways, repent, to come to God and live godly. How are we feeling about our certainty of God hearing us? We look in Scripture and we find great men and women of faith who had a confidence that God heard their prayers. And we look at other Scriptures. We're going to examine the book of James coming up and see that prayer is powerful, and God's given us no uncertain terms in how to approach Him in that. Do we? Do we take advantage of prayer like we should, or do we neglect it? Are we living a lifestyle that we can be confident that God would hear our prayers? If you're unsure about any of those answers, don't be content in that, but say, I want to do what I need to do. I need to learn more about prayer. I need to shore my life up or take care of some things I see that are contradictory to Scripture. What are those things? We'd be happy to pray with you about them if you'd like tonight. Or if you haven't put Christ on in baptism, we'd like to help you do that. Whatever you need is, let us know by having a seat up front as we stand and sing the invitation song.